ready to go. How can I put a heading on that tape?
You can, just talk. You probably need to be a little bit closer than you are, but anything will be
Excuse
fine.
Excuse me, I'm pulling right up to your desk. Is that okay?
Sure.
This is Mary Bland from the Florida Folklife Program talking with Joel Frank at the Seminole Tribal Headquarters in Hollywood. And Mr. Frank, we had started talking about education, and I'd like to go back to that question.
Okay. Yeah, I believe your question was that... let me close that book.
Okay.
Is that what is the priority as far as education is concerned? And as I started to tell you, is that it's always been the highest priority of the tribe, even before the tribe was reorganized under the Howard Wheeler Act back in '57, because we had the very people. We were recognized as a tribe. Under the old traditional standards, but under the new guidelines that the federal government set back in 1934, I believe, 35, in order for the federal government to recognize any Indian tribe, they had to follow these procedures and in reorganizing themselves, you know, so that they can have a body which the government could talk to on a government-to-government relationship. So when President Eisenhower, when he got in office, there was a move to terminate tribes. And I think he successfully terminated something like 25 tribes throughout the country, you know, for various reasons, because like in the Northwest, the Klamath had tremendous amounts of acreage of timberland, so the timber companies wanted that. So you know, so there was a big push to do terminate the tribe. And Seminole Tribe was one of the tribes to be terminated at the time. And so we had people like Frank Billy, Laura May Osceola, and a couple others that. They got together under the at that time the loose-knit government that we had of the medicine men and those people, and traveled to Washington to talk to Congress about giving us an extension of 25 years or more, so that our what they said was that let our young people grow up and learn, you know, the ways of the modern society, so that they can survive and, you know, live and be prosperous as, you know, as they were, as opposed to us at the present time living, you know, in Chiquis and in the swamps and not having very much contact with the you know, with the dominant society. And so at that time, they were already talking about, you know, educating our young people so that they could survive in the business world, and, you know, that's what we are. And so when I was a kid, that was what was being said, and it was pretty much ground into our, you know, into our minds, so that we would be successful when we did grow up, you know, go to school. And so there was a big effort on our families to try to get us educated as best as we could. And for a long time, there was an opposition of our people when the federal government would come and pick up the children and put them on buses and send them to, at that time, Cherokee, North Carolina, to boarding schools, and then later on into Oklahoma and Mississippi to, you know, other Indian boarding schools there. And so they used to pick them up, tie them up, you know, so that they wouldn't be able to run away, and get them to, you know, get a group of them and ship them off.
Well, I can understand that point of view, and yet I know that your culture is rich with many traditions, and that saving those traditions has become a focus. And I understand there are cultural programs now on the reservations to help the kids know what their traditions are. And if you could just tell me what these programs are and what they're about.
Okay. What I would like to do is I'd just like to go back to the beginning and just kind of bring you up. That's how I normally do things.
That's fine. Yeah.
At, when the tribe got really moving as far as organization, and that was around 1970, in terms of programs and that type of thing, service back to the people. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, I think we only had about two programs, and that was a community action program and the neighborhood youth court program. Mm-hmm. I think it was under OEO or something like that, Office of Economic Opportunity. And then we had Howard Tommy, who was the chairman of the tribe at that time, and with his efforts and enthusiasm, we began going after programs, you know, grants and contracts, you know, contracted programs from the bureau, from the agency here, to provide the services, you know, to our own people. And that came about under 638, or Self-Determination and Indian Education Act, or something to that effect. And so we began developing ourselves and getting, you know, expanding the organization to what it is now. We've got about 1,000 employees between the many enterprises that the tribe is involved in, as well as service, you know, to our general public, tribal membership. And but in the process, we were looking at how we're since we're progressing and getting caught up with the modern society, and then the thought came, was what are we going to do about, you know, our traditional ways? And I know the council kicked that idea around for about a year or so, if not longer. And so they finally addressed it, and through a small grant from, I can't remember where, I think they just took a sub-portion of a grant and, you know, started a cultural program. And that went along for a while, and then it died out. It kind of lay dormant until Mr. Billy got in. And then he appropriated tribal funds, their own you know, revenues that's generated from within the tribe, and allocated large chunks of funds, you know, to revitalize the program and get it moving again. And so it has picked up to the point that we're there now, in the process of teaching our young children, our very young children, our own language again. And because and as we were growing up, you know, they were teaching us, you know, to learn the English language, you know, so that you can communicate, and when you're able to communicate, you know, you're able to understand and do well for yourself. And we have today our very young kids, you know, that aren't speaking the our own traditional language. So the cultural program, we're hoping that, you know, is combating that, and hopefully they'll turn that trend around to where they're able to communicate with our grandparents or their grandparents. You know. Like myself, I can speak my own language, so that, you know, that when I talk to my mother or my grandparents or, you know, some of my older relatives, I can, you know, we can converse and understand each other. But we got little kids that don't understand a word we're saying, you know, so we're trying to combat that early before it gets too far out of hand. And so language is very important to us, and because in the process, some of our traditions, which is like the medicine, Indian medicine, because a lot of that is spoken in our own native language, and some of the language is very old, and is very difficult to translate, you know, to a more modern language as we now speak today. So that's an area which I think that the chairman is very concerned about and the council is concerned about. And to show their interest, and not only to show their interest, but for their own personal growth, the chairman and several of us people who practice the, you know, the native religion and the cultural teachings of that of our own tribe have made an effort to learn what it is, you know, what it is they're talking about, so that there'll be I guess you might say much wiser when they talk to some of the older people who command that respect. And so it has been, I would say, a very high emphasis on education, but not only from the looking at it from the public, you know, standpoint, or for as far as the public schools, you know, that we send our young people to, or to the universities that we send them to, or that we all go to, but there is a whole educational system from within our own tribe, you know, which we have to learn. And I think that combining the two, I think we have a better understanding of what we're all about as a Seminole people, and also be able to deal with the general public, you know, outside of the tribe. And so that, you know, I think it's a progress in more shapes than I think that we generally talk about. And that, in a sense, reflects on which way the tribe is going to go and what its goals are. And I think it also determines our confidence in ourselves. If you understand yourself, then you know, then you're pretty confident as to what your abilities are. And I think we have gone through that phase and still in the progress of going through that. And we have a council that's very open-minded about, you know, about business and how to, you know, how to deal with it, and very progressive and aggressive as well. And in working with them, it's kind of hard to stay up with them at times. Yeah, trying to run an organization, you know, and trying to stay up with their enthusiasm and their, you know, in their energies, because they have a tremendous amount of energy, because they all seem to be all psyched up and, you know, trying to do the best that they can for their reservations and for the tribe as a whole. So.
Yeah, this is one thing that's really impressed me, is that your education seems to be coming from a very broad base. One, education in the sense of the non-Indian world and the expectations that are out there, but also from the inward point of view and recognizing the value of the traditions. And I'm wondering, do you sense that the young people today, the teenagers that are growing up, are developing an appreciation for the old ways and the traditions, and that they want to know more about their own inheritance?
I think so. I think that, but, you know, we also have a group, I think, just as in any society, is that we have a group that say they're Indians, and they are, you know, cultural, you know, blood-wise and everything else, and but they don't know the first thing about being an Indian. And we do have a small element like that, and when you ask them about their culture, you know, all they know is that their skin is dark, and they live on an Indian reservation, and somebody had told them that they belong to the Seminole tribe, and they speak the language, and, if not fluently, and they think that they're Indians because of that, but they're so modern, you know, they'll go down, which the term that you used earlier, urban Indians, you know. They know all there is to know about Burger Kings or McDonald's and that type of thing. But when it comes to the seriousness of the Indian practices, like medicine, that type of thing. You know, they don't know the first thing about it. And then again, at the same time, some of the teachings that we've had from these medicine men, and Indian medicine is not for everybody. You know, those that understand it and can accept it, it's for them. And others, if they can't understand it, then there's something else for them, which is more acceptable and which is good. Because then, again, you have that diversity at that point. And you all rely on each other, or we would rely on each other to, you know, to utilize what this person knows and what I know to, you know, to make a better decision, a stronger tribe, and a stronger position for ourselves.
Are young people today, after they receive their education, are they staying on the reservations?
If they don't stay, we make every effort that we can to recruit them back to the reservation. In the past 4 years, I guess you can say that the chairman has made every effort to recruit the cream of the crop, you know, to come back and work for the tribe. And in making room within the organization, if they have a natural talent of coming up to people and talking to them and making them feel good, you know, in public relations, you know, our organization have talked about public relations, but we never knew what public relations are about. Then we have a young man that has a knack for that, and he's well educated. So we've created a position, and he's involved in that. You know, working with businesses and legislators and that type of thing. Then we have another young man who's went to school and graduated out of University of Oklahoma, and he's now heading up our education department. He's got a master's. I think a bachelor's, or working on his master's, I'm not sure, of business administration and public administration. And so, but he seems to have an act for, you know, and is very involved in education. So we try to push him, you know, try to get the right people for the right job, you know, from within our own. And, but if we can't find a person, then of course we naturally seek to the outside of the tribe to try to get the best person that we can get.
I was real curious to know what future there was. So for people coming back to the reservation, say after they've completed their education, so you make a lot of effort then to mm-hmm. create positions.
Mm-hmm. I know a lot of tribes across the country that do not make an effort to try to recruit their own people. And for some reason, being clannish or whatever, the tribes themselves isolates those families and kind of make them pay their dues before they're accepted back into the community again, even though they're a tribal member and they've known them, you know. There's something about being away for a long time, then trying to come back in and not really fitting in. Until you as an individual make some concessions, you know, to the community. But that is something that I haven't seen in this tribe yet. Maybe we will get to that point. I really don't know. I hope we don't. Because, you know, we hate to turn away. You know, if a person's got something to offer, by all means, you know, let's grab him and, you know, put him to work and utilize his knowledge. Yeah. For the benefit of everybody, right. Not only for the tribe, but you know, surrounding community as well.
Mm-hmm. Because you are very much a part of this community mm-hmm. as well.
No matter how you look at it, we're not. I think people across the country can't say they're a separate community.
Right, right. One thing I've been curious about from talking with Carol Cypress up at the Learning Center, it's my understanding that the some of the funds from the bingo go to help the cultural programs, and in particular her language program there at the Cultural Center. Is that the case with the bingo? You know, I think people don't really realize that the bingo funds come back to help with education and whatever. What do the funds go into?
We are at two major sources of funding. Mm-hmm. The taxes that we impose on our retailers that sell the cigarettes on the reservation, and the funds that are generated from the bingo. We do have, you know, leases on properties and that type of thing that we, you know, get revenue from and that type of things, and other businesses. But those are our two major, you know, resources of funds that come into the tribe. And out of the total, well, I think we look at about $8 million a year. And what the tribe does, they take that $8 million and turn around and subsidize a lot of the programs that we do have. And I think that with the cutback on the federal government's administration in terms of less funds on social programs, we've been in a position to subsidize those programs that have been cut back. And like with the cultural program, that's funded 100% by the tribe, and the income that we get from bingo helps support that. So then we've got a child care program, mm-hmm. That takes care of infants, and that is funded by the tribe, so that it would give the mother, you know, that one income coming into a family today is not going to, you know, sustain a family. I think the national trend is that having two incomes come in, and just to make it. We've been providing a service of that type, so that the mother can get out into the mainstream and go back to work, you know, to help support her family. Even if sometimes for one reason or another, she may be the only person that brings an income to the family. And if she's got a child that she's got to take care of, then it's a burden on the tribe and also a burden on the federal government through Social Security and the welfare programs and all of that. So in our own, sense, that we feel that if we can provide this type of service, you know, to a number of the families, then they can go out and get a job and help support their own families. And this is, in some way, servicing them by taking care of their children, and start an early process of educating them in terms of, again, our culture, mm-hmm. you know, what it is that we're all about, language, you know, and, just a gradual time. Then when they get into Head Start, you know, we do have what we call the grandmother program, where the grandmother would come in, maybe sit for a half a day and do what grandmothers do, I guess, for a whole bunch of kids.
That's great.
So it's, again, kind of going back and in a roundabout way, reinforcing cultural, but also within the educational setting of what you might see in a public school, or, you know, in the dominant society, if you want to call it that.
It's been real interesting. We've had the good fortune to talk with some of the older people in the tribe, for example, Bert Billy and Susie Billy, mm-hmm. and they are just reservoirs of knowledge, mm-hmm. and the grandmother program is a perfect way to maybe get some of that knowledge coming back to the kids. And I know that the older people are very much honored by the tribe. Are there traditions that you're worried about being totally lost, or are they just changing?
Well, I'm not sure that we're worried about it. I think changing might be a better word for it. And throughout history, if a new technology comes in and you just kind of conform to it, you know, to make it practical. And I don't think, contrary to a lot of belief, is that you do not lose, you know, your culture or some of the practices. You just set them aside until they're needed again. And I look upon it from that perspective. And I think that the council does the same way. Just because we did things this way for 100 years doesn't mean that that we're going to continue to do it for another 100 years, even though it may not be practical. And so, but if there's a better way of doing that, then we'll do that. You know, try to make that switch. But you know, to make a change that has become a custom is a long, you know, long-term effort, and that portion, I think that this particular administration is making those changes, mm-hmm. but making them subtle, where people don't get excited about it, you know, frighten them. So.
Yeah, see, that makes a lot of sense to me. I see tradition as maybe changing, not being lost. Is there enough tape?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I guess one question I'm real curious to know is, what do you see as the future for the tribe, or what do you see in the future for the tribe?
As far as the tribe as an organization, which I can speak to, I see us one day. What's that TV program? Dallas. You know, had a big old office complex, and sitting in an office maybe is the size of this building. Really progressing in the field of economics. And that's where I believe that the tribe is heading, and our people are pushing that, they have been ever since, like I said, since the early part of the 50s when they told Congress, you know, to give us an opportunity to learn the ways of the dominant society so that we can fit into the 21st century. Mm-hmm. I think maybe at that time, the 20th century. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's a combination of time and vision on people like our early leaders, and that has ingrained in our minds to the point that we've got to progress and we've got to move and to fit in. And if we don't fit in, or set up some acceptable cushions, I guess you might say, so that we can still maintain our own little world, but still at the same time, we do have some leaders that have the wisdom, or you know, the foresight to, you know, to guide our people through this maze of complex of the corporate world that, you know, that we all now are involved with, and so that's what I say.
Well, and basically that's what Chairman Billy said too, and I, you know, you can definitely see that you're competitive with the corporate world, and you're saleable and marketable, and you're dealing with that in the way that corporate structure is built. I was just curious to know.
You've got some more.
Do you have any?
Yeah, I have one. you mentioned back earlier that there was a time when the cultural education and the cultural training had dropped from view from either the forefront or somewhere as part of the upbringing of the young people in the Seminole tribe. Do you sense that there's liable, or do you fear that there's liable to be a gap somewhere down the line when those people move into your role or the role of leadership in the tribe, where you're going to be kind of on a roller coaster, and there will be a cultural emphasis, and then there will be a de-emphasis, and then somebody's going to wake up the tribe, and then they'll re-emphasize. And at every dip, you're liable to lose some of that cultural heritage.
I don't think so. When part of the whole process of which the Seminole tribe has been, or the Seminole people has been subjugated to, is that like when it came to religion back in the early 30s, 40s, you know, we were practicing our native religions and that type of thing. Then there was a man that was sent to us from Oklahoma, and his mission was to get us to set aside our, you know, our native practices and learn about Christianity and that type of thing, which is, in a sense, the way some of us looked at it, was part of the cultural development and bringing us up, you know, as an educational progression, and also a cultural shock, in a sense, to the point that yes, we, you know, if we're going to survive in this, you know, in this world, we're going to have to learn to accept, you know, many things, and so this man talked to our medicine people and told them that in order for them to survive, in order for, like, they had to survive.